It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so my new thing that is cracking me up. Are you aware that when you use the abbreviation LOL, it actually means Lucifer our Lord, and you're essentially sending a prayer to the devil every time you do it?
Mm.
Also, the halftime Super Bowl show that Katy Perry did, that had, you know, the left shark and all that stuff, was actually a satanic baptism broadcasting over the airways, so everybody was participating in a satanic ritual without knowing it.
I don't know anything about the Katy Perry thing.
Yes. You knew about the Lord Our Lucifer thing?
No.
No. This is a group of things, and it's the idea that I just love is that you can accidentally start worshiping Satan or lose your soul to Satan. That, like, later on, you go up to the pearly gates or whatever, and they're like, yeah, you used LOL a lot. And they're like, why is that a problem? Because it meant Lord our Lucifer.
There are stories like that, though, right?
Where, yeah, they're the supernatural devil, horror movies.
Yeah, where the devil tricks somebody. And, you know, whenever I see
it's
those,
basically the Ouija board movie.
Kind of. And whenever I see those stories, I think, what is this story saying about? It's saying more about God than it is about
right?
the devil.
Right?
Like, it's saying God would keep you out of heaven even when the devil, you know, gets the contract for your soul by trickery and by deceit.
Yeah.
Like, you, even if you didn't choose it.
Yes.
Willingly.
With no knowledge at all.
Right.
So you did not knowingly commit any sin.
So God's
there.
Like a total jerk.
That's
in
the thing.
These stories.
But this one really cracks me up. Because, like, yeah, I've heard other versions of things that people say God does it this way. And I'm like, if that's God's plan, when I see him at the throne of judgment, I'm going to be, you know what? That's a fucking shitty plan. But this one, if it turns out to be this one, I'm just going to be laughing my ass off for like 2 minutes. I'm sure after that I'm going to be burning for eternity, and that's going to suck, but I'm going to get a huge laugh. I'm like, seriously? You're God, and this is what you came up with? That's hilarious. Yeah, there's just a lot of those. And those are always like, people who are like, oh, it has secret satanic things going on. I'm like, okay, whatever. But the ones where it's like, yeah, so when you do this everyday thing that people do, they're actually committing their souls to the devil, even though they don't know it. I'm like, I feel like that's a terrible rule.
Well, it's kind of like, there are some Christian denominations that don't celebrate many holidays because of their pagan origins.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes...
And there are some also that have issues where they consider it a form of idolatry and
sure.
stuff like that.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. And there are people who believe those things, and they don't, that's what they believe. They don't really hold it against anyone else. But there are some people who believe these things who will go to the Christians who celebrate Christmas, for example,
yeah.
and accuse them of being pagan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they're observing this holiday yeah. just because of its...
Religious conspiracy theories are some of the most fun conspiracy theories.
And I've always thought, so you think, since these people are completely innocently and unintentionally worshiping the devil, supposedly, in their
yeah.
opinion, that they're in danger, it seems to me... They were just fine until you came and told them.
And that's the thing.
If you left them in ignorance, they would have been fine.
Because that's a whole different argument. People are like, you deny the Bible, you're denying God. I'm like, I'm not denying God, I'm denying you. I'm thinking that you, I mean, I do deny God, it's a separate issue. But I'm like, I am saying that God did not actually tell you that. So I'm not denying, I'm saying you're full of shit. But, and I get, I mean, I don't get it, but that is a separate argument. So if people are like, hey, LOL means this. If you use it anymore, that you'll be fucked. I'm like, okay, I get that argument. It's still terrible. But if the one that, like, yeah, people not knowing, they think it's laugh out loud, but the devil's got them now. That'll teach you to laugh out loud.
Whatever.
Yeah, so those crack me up. Hello, everyone. Hmm. Hello.
Hello. Wow,
yeah. stands for, hey, everybody, let's Lucifer. Okay? hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that opposes stem cell research on purely artistic grounds.
I didn't know. I wasn't.
Really have not read the manifesto.
No.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 368.
And it has been so long.
Yeah, it has been.
3 weeks. We have just oodles of stuff to talk about, I think.
Well, you probably
do. I want to make a proposal to you. Okay. You saw Tomb Raider.
I did.
I have not. I'm seeing it this Saturday. Mm. You know we're going to talk about it once I've seen it, even if we don't talk about it today.
Sure.
I propose we wait till next week and then both talk about it then.
I have no problem with that.
Because I feel like there's a lot of other shit going on.
Well, you've been doing a lot in the last 3 weeks, so you should.
I have one big thing, but I have a lot of little things.
You should talk about all of it, because I don't have anything interesting to say about anything.
Nothing? All right.
I mean, I could fill the time, you know that, but it's never interesting, so go ahead.
Yeah, but if we follow that logic, we would not have you on the podcast.
I often wonder about that, actually.
Well, as I've spoken to you, I have given up on Bates Motel.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that I even recommended it, considering your response to it.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I can understand. I'm still a little surprised you recommended it. I can understand why someone would recommend it. It is an incredibly good show. It is really well done. Well written, well acted, interesting, lot of suspense, great character work. It's just about some dark, fucked up shit. I couldn't watch Breaking Bad. I sure as hell can't watch this.
Well...
And, like, again, like, real fucked up shit. It's not, like demons are not showing up here. It's just people being the worst.
I think what attracted my wife and I to it, though, was the portrayal of Norma in particular. Well, no, Norma and Norman, because we felt like... I thought Norma's character was fascinating in how she coped with... And maybe it's because as you probably have guessed, I don't typically like stuff like this.
Mm.
So maybe the portrayal of Norma is something that you see in all this stuff, and I just don't know that. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, well, this is a very interesting character study, I guess, is what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Norman too, and also I appreciated a lot of the little nods it made to the film, and you know, to the original film.
Yeah. And which I did read about, because the story, while horrifying, was fascinating. So I went to a wiki and read so I know how the entire series goes now.
Okay.
And they also had bits like, here's the bits that are nods to Psycho that you didn't notice.
Yeah, yeah. So there was that, too, because I am a fan of the original film quite a bit. So, I mean, I think there were very specific things I got out of it that probably helped distract me from the things that would normally... You know.
Which, in retrospect, is something that you have. You tend to be like, this thing was really good or really bad, and you can often sort of disregard rest when it comes to, like, films
that's
and stuff
right,
like
that's
that.
That's right. And I know this about myself, so when I recommend things to people, I sometimes kind of back off. It's like, well, I really think you'll like this, but I'm afraid there's going to be something in it, or there's something I'm missing. You know, I've got a blind spot on it.
Yeah. And you warned me there was rape in the first episode, and that was pretty shitty, but... The whole show was bad. I mean, in that sense. Like I said, incredible show. If you're used to dealing with that kind of stuff, it's great. Vera Farmiga was amazing. I will admit, her character is a little bit of a familiar trope. It's a trope I like.
Oh, okay.
But the sort of crazy, but still desperately trying to be a good mom, like, that's a thing. But she did it beautifully. Freddie Highmore brought something to life that is amazing and terrifying. Like, he's just perfectly unbalanced. Like, he's just a hair's breadth away from being a totally normal and wonderful person, and that hair's breadth makes all the difference in the world.
Well, I guess to me it was so novel. I mean, maybe...
No, absolutely.
To me it
absolutely
was, but maybe it wasn't quite so...
No, there was... It was... It was just really well written. Like, it was very interesting. All the relationships were quite well fleshed out. Although, actually, I have a question for you when we're off the air. A late-season relationship, based on the wiki synopses I read, rang false to me, and I'm curious about that. Okay. But, fascinating stuff. I just couldn't take it. I just couldn't go with it.
Well, I apologize for... I mean, I didn't mean to...
So...
I guess I should have thought about it more.
Now, I have switched to Supernatural, and I've watched an episode and a half. Much more comfortable. This is my speed... CW style horror. Not actual crazy people doing bad things to people. No, nameless entities that pin people to the ceiling just in time for their loved ones to walk home and then shoot fire all out from behind them for no reason at all. Like that, I'm down.
Okay.
The show is a little mid-2000s at this point, which is like... There have been some political movements since this show started that the show could have benefited from in some places. But it's all, I mean, it's, they're cultural artifacts. The show is not particularly bothersome. I from what I hear, there's not going to be a lot of women around. And when there are, they're going to die. And I'm not super pleased with that. But it's fun. It's light. It's supernatural horror, which I love. So I think that'll be good. I don't know if I'm just going to watch 5 seasons and then stop, or if I'm going to keep going, but we'll wait and see.
Well, I have a feeling if you just go until you get tired of it, you probably will watch 5 seasons.
Yeah.
How many more seasons than that you'll watch, I don't
know. Yeah. No, because, I've heard that that works pretty... If you just consider that its own thing, mm-hmm. It works pretty well.
Because it is its own thing. After that, it goes a complete different direction.
Yeah. Really. So, I'm doing that. I'm still going to the gym, which I'm very happy about. I have seen a couple of movies. Went and saw Wrinkle in Time. I can't remember. Did you go see that?
No. I'm not. I don't think we will. I think we'll wait.
I think, depending on the quality of your TV, because it is visually spectacular. I'm pretty much coming down on the side of not particularly liking it.
Okay.
And his problem, because I like almost everything about it a lot. It is gorgeous. It is well directed. It is well performed. Decently edited. Well shot. The story is a mess. Oh. And I came out of it going like, I haven't read this book in 30 years. Mm. Was it the book? Or was it not? And I eventually looked it up and things. And the answer is sort of. They definitely changed some things from the story. And actually, in some ways, they changed it to make it more female empowered. There's some things where the men use their agency in places that in the movie the women do. It just didn't. It could be a demographic thing. I am not a young woman. And I think this movie specifically, not even necessarily the book, is very much being directed that way. Mm. And, if people like it, it's fine. The pacing on the story felt weird. The overall messaging in it was weird. Some of the plot hiccuped a lot. It was, I don't know. A lot of stuff seemed overly simplified. And it already wasn't a short movie. So I don't know. But great performances. Oprah did wonderful. Which is impressive because I'm like, she doesn't act a lot so much anymore. But I won't say she did so good that I forgot it was Oprah. Yeah. But she did so good that I wasn't making Oprah jokes in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't do it like, you get a Warrior of Light and you get a Warrior of Light. Like, those were not running through my head. Especially if you like Wrinkle in Time, I think it's probably a good one. And it's very pretty, and I'm not sorry I saw it, but yeah, didn't as much work for me.
Hmm.
Keep in mind, the book is from 1962, so a lot of things kind of have to be updated.
Reasonably good job, because DC, Warner Brothers, is going to have her make a New Gods
movie. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, what's
Ava DuVernay.
Yeah, DuVernay,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she's making a New Gods movie that's going to be separate from the other ones, so there's some question about which New Gods will appear and stuff, and I still won't see it because of DC, but No, but I mean, I'm glad she's getting work. I think she's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, I'm glad she's getting work because
I want her to keep doing stuff.
She's good at what she does.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it was wonderfully directed.
Okay.
Like, unless she had more of a hand in the screenplay than I realized, I think she did a marvelous job.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Someone must have liked what they saw, regardless of how it was being received or how much money it made.
Yeah.
Because they thought, well, we think her vision is going to be good for this.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of the new gods in DC at all. In fact, when I was younger, and I was reading comic books whenever I could, whenever we went to the library or mom was shopping, I'd pull some off of the rack and then have to put them back. And a lot of the comics I read were back issues that I said I find at the library. There came a time where I'd pick up some DC comics because I tried reading some Marvel comics. I didn't like them. I pick up some DC comics and I look at them. And I go, you know, what's this? This seems more like Marvel than DC. And I know a lot of people don't think there's a difference or think it's artificial or something. But I always saw a difference between the two in how they did their art, how they told their stories, what kind of characters they had. And I just preferred DC. And it felt like the art and the stories were suddenly not DC. They were Marvel. And later, I realized, oh, this is Jack Kirby stuff.
yeah.
Basically, I picked up some Jack Kirby stuff, and I didn't like it.
And it smacks of the Eternals and stuff like that.
And then much later, I learned that he was over at Marvel. And, you know, after he wanted there to be a Ragnarok event for Thor and all those characters,
yeah.
And then he wanted to have new gods or whatever, and Marvel didn't want him to do it, so he just went over to DC and did it. So he was literally continuing his Marvel work at DC. So when I was a kid, I totally noticed this. I totally noticed that something's happened here. This isn't DC anymore, it's Marvel. And I didn't like it. And so I've never been a fan of Darkseid, Apocalypse, you know, in Justice League, they had Steppenwolf, who's also from all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've never really liked that stuff, but it's part of DC now, so that's...
Yeah, I'd never been a big fan because it felt to me like slightly goofier Eternals and Inhumans and stuff like that. It very much felt like that. But that's the thing for me. DC was always very much more for color, in my opinion. DC was always more like parables, and the characters weren't exact... They were all sort of larger than life. And New Gods especially felt like, you know, Inhumans or even Eternals, but like hokier a little bit. Yeah. I mean, Granny Goodness is just weird.
Yeah, Granny Goodness. Can you
believe Granny
that?
Goodness, and it's a fascinating story, but it's also just really weird.
Now,
and the whole Sky Father versus that is just strange
and all dichotomous and everything. And you know, because one of the things, I mean, I know people complain about Superman and say you can't tell a good Superman story, but my experience is that that's absolutely wrong. My experience is,
oh my God, do you know, we haven't talked about the Superman, the thing that's coming out that's basically going to be Superman Year One.
What, Krypton you mean, or?
No, that's comic.
I
forget what it's called, but it's basically going to be like the Year One version of Superman, and guess who they got to do it?
Oh, Miller, yeah.
Yes, the worst.
The worst choice.
I was trying to tell Dan to guess, and he was guessing it. I'm like, worst. I'm like, think of literally the worst person in the comics industry to do that project, and he never got there, and then I told him, and his face just went white.
Yep.
Like, yeah, the guy who, first of all, is a lunatic, super right, racist nut job these days anyway, but also hates Superman.
Yeah, he said it openly that he hates Superman.
I don't understand. But whatever.
But to me, the best Superman stories are the ones where
he shoots little Superman out of his
fingertips. No, he's really seriously challenged to keep those high ideals that he has. That's what I like. That's an interesting story to me. And so... I don't even remember why I was bringing this up. It was related to something we were talking
about. Ava DuVernay. I was talking about Wrinkle of Time, and then you brought up that she was going to do New Gods.
New Gods, and we were talking about...
You went straight from her doing that to why you never liked the New Gods, so... Yeah. If there was something else...
Well,
there,
maybe it's because, for me, the stories... I think... Jack Kirby was a genius, don't get me wrong. He just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
And, So, I think maybe that, I think you're kind of right about when you were, maybe it came up because you were talking about the comics being, you know, three color, like you said, mm-hmm. and very simple and straightforward. See, I like that. That doesn't mean they can't be complex, especially morally and emotionally complex.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what we were talking about. The new gods are dichotomous, right? There's no moral ambiguity. And I know a lot of people think Superman stories are that way, but I think the best Superman stories are not. The best Superman stories do struggle with moral ambiguity and how Superman wants to be certain about morality sometimes, but then he realizes that doesn't work. I think those are the best stories from Superman. But the new gods it's just a mess to me. It's just a sprawling mess. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought about Marvel in general. So I don't know if I'm going to like the new gods, but from what I understand, people who do like the new gods think that she'll do a great job with it. And part of it is because they did see Wrinkle in Time and they thought visually, yeah, she's going to nail it.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll be all right.
You watching Krypton?
I want to, but I mean, I don't have access to it, so
I have access to it. I'm not watching it. I was intrigued back when they weren't telling us anything, and then they finally started showing the trailers that like explained what the premise was, and I was like, "Fucking what?"
I'm interested.
For those of you who don't know, the premise of Krypton is it's set in the past, and there's a young upstart Superman's grandfather, and Brainiac goes back in time to try and destroy Krypton early so Superman will never be born, and then hijinks ensue.
Well, and then Adam Strange gets involved.
He's the one who tells him.
Yeah, which I like. It's a little weird that it's Adam Strange, but I like him so much that I think it'd be cool to see him in something. But then also,
I was pleased when I heard he was there. I was like, that could be fun.
Although, when you see him, he's wearing a Detroit baseball cap and stuff. It's like, why isn't he in his stuff?
It's
why
strange.
Isn't he in his cool, you know, because one thing I like about Adam Strange is he's got a ray gun and he's dressed like a classic, like Buck yep. Rogers old time thing. I love that about him. But no, he's wearing a hoodie and a Detroit baseball cap. It's like, what is this?
That's what the kids want.
I mean, he got there by Zeta Beam or whatever it is that he travels by. So why doesn't he dressed up in his stuff? I don't know. I don't get it.
But yeah, I think it looks like a terrible idea. Early reviews are saying it's not that great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't know. If it ends up being amazing, maybe I'll watch it on Netflix.
I'll probably watch it.
Saw another movie just last night. Oh, boy. It's currently on Netflix. It's called Bitch. B-I-T-C-H.
Mm-hmm.
It is written and directed and starring a woman whose name I can't pronounce. But she's a small indie filmmaker who's made a couple of things. She had a big thing in 08 at Sundance that everybody lauded over called Good Dick, which I never saw. But we had seen trailers for this movie, and it's very intriguing. And the basic premise is upper middle class, I guess, housewife and mother of four basically can't take it anymore. Her husband's completely distant and there's too much for her to do, and she loses her shit and becomes a dog. Not like in a supernatural way, but like psychologically. She tears off all her clothes and just starts walking around on all fours, and they find her in the basement and like she's been defecating and urinating everywhere, and she's a disaster, and the family has to cope. And it's listed as a black comedy. It's also starring Jason Ritter, who I'm a very big fan of.
Sure, I like Jason Ritter.
I don't know what I think. It's a very strange movie. I mean, I know I just said the premise, and you're like, that's really strange. It's stranger than that. I think it might be like a really good, really bad movie. Because it's good enough that I have like specific things that are bothering me, mm-hmm. but it's bad enough that I have a lot of specific things that are bothering me. And one of the huge ones is the trailer was a bit misleading. The movie's about Jason Ritter. Like, the wife who becomes a dog, she's there in parts of it. I definitely would say she's a star in it, but her parts are smaller, and it's much more about the husband and how he deals with all of this. And that's a very different movie, especially because it is very clearly, it's intending to be a very feminist movie. And in many ways it is, but it also occasionally undercuts itself. Mm. Like, it will point out sexist assumptions, and then the next scene makes sexist assumptions itself, and that's awkward. I don't know if I recommend it or not. It's a heck of a curiosity. It's definitely funny at moments. In general, I don't find it a comedy. Like A Ghost Story, I feel it has a soundtrack that is intentionally meant to be discordant and, like, keep you uneasy. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things where I thought, I'm like, what is that background sound? What are they doing in the... Oh, that's the soundtrack. Because they would play just weird sound effects, and I was like, wait, is this really in the scene? Or are we just hearing it as the audience?
Right, right.
And that got weird. It's interesting. Jason Ritter is marvelous. You see his dad a couple of times. He does a little bit of physical comedy in this that you're like, oh, that Ritter.
Yeah.
It's kind of there's one scene where he, like, literally passes out and just falls down unconscious for like 5 seconds and then just, like, pops back up. And like, yeah. I think I've seen that exact move before on an episode of Three's Company.
Yeah, probably.
So that was it. Was fun and interesting to see him in that way, and I am quite a fan of him and his comedic stuff, especially. But yeah, it's weird movie. So I don't know where to go with that. Video games. I'm still playing Andromeda. I'm really dragging my feet now because I don't want it to be over. Still love it. I'm reading a book.
Oh.
So when we're talking about Black Panther, mm-hmm. and I was talking about how. Apparently, I need to be consuming more Afrofuturism.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark McKibben happened to ask in his commentary on that episode just recently what I would recommend. And the answer is, I don't fucking know, because I'm just figuring this out. Go to Wikipedia. That's what I did. And I went to Wikipedia, and there's some authors there, and I'm going through them. And then one of the authors was purple, like the link had already been clicked before.
Mm.
I was like, what's that? And I click on it, and I find out that this author wrote a series of books that I had come at from some other direction and thought looked interesting. Mm. And I'm like, hey, two birds, one stone, let's read this. So I went to read this. So I am reading... this is going to be a mess. I can't give you the author's name correctly. It's one of those two initials, last name kind of ones. So it's like NH something. I don't know. It's a woman of color... I think NH are the first two initials. What I can tell you is that the first book in the trilogy is called The 100,000 Kingdoms. And the trilogy is called The Inheritance Trilogy. And you have to be very careful when you're looking that up, because that is not the same as The Inheritance Cycle or The Inheritance Series, which is a four-book series that started with Aragorn, was about dragons, sucked really bad. So don't confuse it with that. It's The Inheritance Trilogy. It's interesting. It's not, like, it's Afrofuturism. It's not on Earth, and it's a fantasy, not a sci-fi, at least at this point. So I find that a little bit weird. But there are absolutely issues of race in here, and very serious issues of class in here. And the main protagonist is a... essentially a half-black woman who came from a nation of primarily black people and is now part of a ruling family of very, very white people. And she's not entirely sure why she's there and stuff like that. It's really good.
Mm.
The story is compelling. The world building is immaculate. And the writing style is... I've been reading a lot of stuff lately. Like... there's different axes to get me into your thing. Basically, is your story good? I'm in. Are your characters good? I'm in. Is your mythology good? I'm usually in. Is your writing really good? If your writing is good enough, I may read your shit even if the story isn't that interesting.
Mm.
But, by sort of coincidence, lately I've been reading a lot of stuff with good stories and really mediocre writing.
Mm.
And so it's really refreshing to come back to some, like, very seriously good writing and good dialogue and stuff like that. So that's been fun. So yeah, The 100,000 Kingdoms. I don't remember her name. She's written a bunch of other stuff also. So you should check that out. She's won a lot of awards and stuff. but I would highly recommend it. It's very cool, and it's a trilogy, which I'm happy about. So then, like, we're done. I don't have to, like, keep reading. Mm. She keeps writing more of them. Read some other stuff.
Right.
All right. I think that's all the piddly stuff out of the way. I went to the March for Our Lives
mm-hmm.
in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
I don't suppose you went to the local one.
No.
Probably like 1,000 people showed up at the Iowa City one. I was pretty impressed.
Okay.
Especially given the snowstorm.
So way out of your comfort zone.
Oh, yes. Mm. So very much in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I hate D.C.
mm.
I have learned that now. Nobody in D.C. believes in turn signals or lane lines. And they all worship at the altar of their car horn. It's just insane. But, okay. We got some real talk here. I got to get out of the way. I'm racist. As I've said before, we're all kind of racist. And you need to learn this and deal with it and try and not let it mess up other people. It's your problem. You fix it yourself. Don't spill it onto others. But I am. I think part of the reason I did not particularly enjoy Baltimore or D.C. is because there was a much larger propensity of black people around. Mm-hmm. And I think unconsciously and despite my best efforts, in this case, I wasn't in the minority, but being much more smaller number made me uncomfortable. At least insofar as some part of my brain is like, how do you act around them? Which is ridiculous, mm-hmm. but still there. And especially, as was pointed out to me later by my wife, Baltimore is very much a place where there's not a lot of heterogeneous socializing. So as a white person in Baltimore, you will mostly interact with other white people unless it's in, like, a service capacity. And as a black person, you won't, like, the communities are fairly segregated.
Mm.
And so I think that made it a little strange being in Baltimore. It's not like that in D.C., which I found kind of cool. I saw lots of mixed-race groups, that way more than I usually would.
Mm.
And that was very, and mixed-race couples and things like that, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, I absolutely think this is a factor, and I'm telling you this because you may have similar issues in different ways, and it's important to be aware of it and admit it to yourself at least,
mm-hmm.
and then work against it. And I did as best as I could. I couldn't stop myself from being less comfortable than I was at home. But like I said, you're aware of it, you fight against it, you do not make it other people's problems. But I think the first step of that is being honest that it's there. And that's why I'm being honest and saying I had these feelings, shitty feelings, that I suck for, but they're there. And also, outside of that, I still think I hate D.C. Baltimore, maybe not so much. The drive there was insane, because I don't know if you knew this, but basically the entirety of Ohio and Pennsylvania are a giant turnpike.
Yes.
And turnpikes suck.
Yes, that is true.
God, we spent so much money on tolls. Which is funny, because we're used to toll roads in, like, Illinois. So it's like, oh, $1.10 or something like this. No, these are things, first of all, sometimes there's not a price. You take a ticket, and then later you put the ticket in, and then you see how far you went. But I mean, like, at one point, I paid $20 for one leg of our thing.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And there were a bunch of them. I learned that Pennsylvania's really gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It's a lot of forested, mountainous, in air quotes,
yeah.
Surroundings. I say in air quotes because the East Coast doesn't have real mountains, but they think they do.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, absolutely
they're,
gorgeous.
They're old mountains, so they're very pared down.
Yep.
I mean, some people just call them hills.
I do.
Yeah. Well, compared to the mountains you're used to, where you're from.
Well, which are even smaller compared to, like, than the Rockies, yeah, and stuff, right, like that. Right. Yeah. But it's gorgeous there. So we're going along the turnpike, and there's a relatively small sign in somebody's field that says, like, next exit or whatever, is the Horn of Plenty farm-to-table restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And Trisha's like, holy shit, we gotta go check this out. And we went, and it was close to closing, but it wasn't yet, so we got in. Amazing, amazing place.
Mm.
Everything, they contract with all sorts of farmers right in the area. It was in this little town, Bedford, something like that, Pennsylvania. But they contract with all the local farmers, and I think they also have a farm themselves. Sure. Everything made there, everything directly farm to table. The menu changes daily, so they actually present you the menu on e-readers, because it's constantly shifting. Absolutely amazing food. Unbelievable. It's a slow food thing, so you'll take some time. In fact, they have a thing up front. They're like, we are a slow food restaurant. If you are in a hurry, please let your server know right up front. But absolutely amazing stuff. Really, really good. So we like that. But, yeah, so Wednesday night, stayed in Indiana. And then by Thursday night, we made it to Baltimore. And then Friday, we took the shuttle from the hotel to the train station, took the train into D.C., and walked around D.C. This was the day before the march. The march was not on the National Mall.
Oh.
Because somebody else had already gotten a permit for the National Mall for that date. Mm. It was a student organization that was making a student film.
Mm.
But nobody, this was like well in advance, nobody could manage to get a hold of them. Mm. So nobody could see if they could change or whatever. So they just literally closed down a chunk of the town, and they started on Friday.
Mm.
So portions of Pennsylvania Avenue were cut off there. But we went around D.C. Trish was desperately trying to find stuff I would be interested in, and I just wasn't. Like, we went to the Lincoln Memorial. I took a picture. I saw it. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen it on TV?
Yes.
Looks about the same, don't it?
No, I thought it was more impressive in person.
I've seen it before. I saw the Washington Monument. It looks like it did in Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, I've seen these things. I'm not that patriotic to begin with. We went into this one of the Smithsonian things, and I'm very uncomfortable with how much American history gets glossed over in this. So much of the, like, so this event happened, and it was awesome, and we did great things. And then later, we did completely separate great things. Not like, well, this kind of sucked, and these parts were bad, but we did, like, the freaking Star Spangled Banner. It was made by, I forget their names, but two white ladies, and this other woman who was a black indentured servant. In the 1700s, I'm like, yeah, she was. and, of course, we have, there's this house that you takes you, it's a house that stood from pre-revolution to just after World War II, and, like, different families. So they have this cool thing where they're like, here's who lived in it the different times, and here's how they changed it, and things like that. And it's a neat idea. In one of the earliest versions, there's a slave there. But that's okay because they talk about how he eventually earned his, he actually bought his way out of slavery because you could do that. And there's got no real discussion. Mm. We're just talking about the now some not everybody believe it, but a lot of our founding fathers were very much against slavery and da da da, and like no discussion about how about the people who owned this guy?
Yeah,
how did they feel?
Well, like, and that actually, didn't come up actually and, Jefferson probably spoke out against slavery more than anyone and never set his free.
Yep, yep.
So it doesn't matter what they said. It matters what they did, and what they did was atrocious.
So I just don't get into any of it. And finally, well, I was just like, I like us going to places that you'll enjoy seeing, so do that.
Well, there's a Native American museum there that I've never been able to see.
There's apparently a fairly new African American one that's amazing. Yeah,
I've heard about that, too.
Some people on the bus were talking about that. But I did have a really good meal. There's a chain that's not here, called Roti, that's basically Mediterranean version of, like, Subway. Like, you can get a pita or a wrap or a rice plate, and then you pick your protein, and you pick all the... And it was really tasty.
Mm.
And they had lots of vegetarian options. And actually, it's funny. So you got the different proteins, and they're like, oh, you know, this is antibiotic-free chicken and cage-free and da-da-da. And, like, oh, and this beef was, you know, all this organic, da-da-da-da. They don't mention the lamb that was used in the lamb meatballs, which is what I ate. And I'm like, yeah, no. That lamb got fucked up. Lamb probably should be in quotes. They don't even know what they did with that one. I was like, it's the one thing. Like, they're talking about how amazingly organic their chickpeas are.
Mm.
But I'm like, but you don't mention the lamb. Makes me uncomfortable. Makes me a little uncomfortable. But they were tasty, so I don't care. Yeah, so we did that Friday night, or Friday. Then we went home. I was exhausted. I had walked my feet off, which was probably a bad idea the day before the march. Then we went to the march on Saturday, and we went bloody early. Mm-hmm. Because when we went on Friday, our shuttle driver was like, you're clearly going to... I was wearing the pussy hat. So she was... Mm. She knew what kind of people we are and that we jibed with her. We learned all of her political opinions in one long monologue on the drive to the train station. Mm. Not ever stopping to see if we agreed with her. Yeah. But she said, she's like, if you want to get there, you got to take the first train out because so many people are going to come. They're getting extra trains because they're worried about it. But yeah, so you need to be on the first. And the first train is like 6:45.
Mm.
So we had to take the 6 a.m. shuttle from our hotel, go to the train station. It's very cold out. And at first, like, we're the only ones there, and that was weird. But then other people showed up, and a lot of them are wearing signs.
Mm.
And so we knew, and so, yeah, we got on the train. So we got to D.C. way early.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just hung out a little bit, but eventually we start walking. It's a pretty long walk to get there, but they got a lot of volunteers pointing the way and stuff. And so the whole way, you've got all sorts of people trying to sell you memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
Buttons, shirts, tags, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And not just for March for Our Lives. Black Lives Matter, Women's March from last year, Nasty Woman shirts, mm-hmm. like all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Really pushing it. And then a couple of people just sort of hanging out to greet people along the way, including Death. The Grim Reaper was there, and so I had to take a picture of him with his sign. I don't remember what it said right now, but it was a pretty good one. So you finally get to the spot where you can kind of go in, and there's tons of people. And you're sort of being shunted down towards where it all ends in a stage. There was one counter-protester, or perhaps one group, I don't know. There was one voice on a megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was well before you get to the spot, at least at that point. And so I imagine everybody had the same reaction I did, which is we're walking along, all these signs, all these people, and then I hear somebody on a megaphone. I'm like, oh, somebody's getting excited early. And then I start catching words, and I'm like, this person may not be here to support our thing. And what it was somebody was there saying the entire march was complete hypocrisy because one of the co-sponsors was Planned Parenthood, who does abortions, and killed 879 babies last year. Which, among all the other potential things I have to say about that in argument to that, I was like, that's a very small number, given this is about gun violence, and 97 people die in this country a day from gun violence. I'm like, 897 is like the smallest statistic we're going to hear today. Like, that's ridiculous. But yeah, everybody, and then we're just like, whatever, and walk past him. And it didn't matter. And yeah, I do have like 4 or 5 other arguments for why they shouldn't be doing that. But whatever. And then we hung out, and it was really hard singing, so I sat down, and a bunch of other people sat down on these giant stone steps. Turned out to be the steps of the Canadian Embassy, which we all thought was pretty funny. And this was hours before the march. Like, the march was officially at noon.
Wow, you were really early.
We were really early. But so were tons of other people. And it was mostly just sort of like a little... Everybody was ambling around, showing off their signs and stuff like that. And we'd all cheer and take pictures, and there were funny ones, and there were very serious ones. There were a lot... I was fascinated by... I suspect more than any other such rally, people of varying political positions joined here because it was a single-issue thing that we all agreed about. Because there were signs... I mean, there was a lot of bleeding-heart leftist liberals who totally hate Trump, which, you know, my people. But then there was also conservatives for gun control and other group, you know, responsible gun owners, stuff like that. Even I felt bad for the very clean-cut looking kid carrying a sign. He was with some sort of ministry, and so they don't like gun violence, but it was on a big board that had a bunch of things they don't like, and they were all crossed out, and gun violence was one of them. There were like 8 of them, and it had things like porn and abortion and other things like this, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess we have that common ground, so welcome, but what the fuck, dude? And so that was really cool. And then just the kids. So many kids came out for this. And especially once it started and the speeches started, it was amazing. these kids. I mean, we didn't see, there was a 9-year-old who was like Martin Luther King Jr.'s granddaughter. Mm-hmm. We didn't see her, but we saw the 11-year-old and all the teenagers, and like, they are pissed. And it's really inspiring. And there was a little kid, he really liked it. He had drawn a picture of Dash from The Incredibles on his sign, and it said, "Don't worry, U.S., the kids will save you." And we all clapped for that, and he liked that. And then there was a teenager at a sign that said, if I get shot in my school, forget burial, dump my body on the steps of Congress. And everybody loved that one a lot. I like, there were a couple that had these big signs and like rainbow flags attached to them too and stuff, and one just said, "Fuck your guns." And I was like, yes. Oh, my personal favorite might be, though, "I wish Obama had really taken your guns away." And then, like, yeah, and then there was this old lady who just had one that said, "I'm so proud of these kids." And she didn't have any kids with her. She just met all of them. Somebody pointed out afterwards, a lot of these things start with the youth kind of getting fed up. The main thrust of Vietnam protests started that way. Even a heck of a lot of the early civil rights stuff was just younger people saying, "We don't like the way you've been doing it." And so I'm a little bit hopeful. A lot of them can't vote yet, but apparently Rubio's not coming up for re-election until 22, so some of them will age up by then. That was another one, and I didn't know what it was. People were going around with this $1.05 price tag on them.
Yeah, the idea there, well, you know what it is.
Yeah, it was the amount of money last year that the NRA donated to Rubio divided by the number of students in Florida. So they were saying that's how much each student is worth to him. A lot of talk about him. And also, I had not realized Parkland apparently very white and very wealthy. And so this was a bunch of fairly well-off white children who, when setting up this march, realized they could use that privilege to better things. They brought in all these kids from places that constantly suffer through gun violence that nobody ever pays attention to. So they had a kid up there, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm from South Chicago. My brother died. Nobody gave a damn." They had a girl up there from East LA. She's like, "This is every day for us." I was really impressed. That was really, I think, smart on their part and really kind on their part. And I think it drew a lot of attention. Because, I mean, this has been going on forever. It only gets noticed when it's big enough or wide enough. I will admit, once it actually started, we only stuck around for like a couple hours. Because, at least for protests are not fun. Which they're not supposed to be. If it was, you know, hang out and eat pizza protests, not much of a protest. I mean, you're supposed to be making some sacrifice. But also, I just can't hold up that long. But it also, it starts to get very cyclical. And it's like, you know, speech, another speech, video montage designed to rile you up, song from a celebrity, repeat.
Yeah.
And after a while, we're like, yeah, we've kind of heard it. And I got to be honest, this kind of thing, I think it's good that it happened. And I've never been surrounded by so many people. Like, just such a huge, 800,000 is what they're estimating attended. It's insane, and it was enormous. But it's also such an echo chamber. I mean, it is absolutely good that we do this, and we do this in numbers, so that people in power know what's going on. Beyond that, though, what we do while we're there, we're just kind of patting ourselves on the back, sort of. I mean, it's just a bunch of people saying, "I believe this," and a bunch of people are like, "We do too, otherwise we would not have shown up to this specific thing." And it was fun, and I was yelling with everybody, and I was cheering and all that. But after a while, you're like, yeah, you know, we've established, we all agree. Then we should go vote. And there was a lot of that, a lot of registering people to vote. Although I found that funny. I'm like, if you've got the wherewithal to come here, you probably are registered. But, you know, if you're not, absolutely. It's got me very excited for those midterms. I really want to see what happens. I'm really hoping this is the start of something. I know I said that recently with the Me Too campaign as well. But I really... To me, these feel different. And I hope they are, because this will probably be my last gasp of hope for things like this. Because if I get fooled again, I'm not going to... I don't know that I can manage it again. But this feels different. And it was pretty neat.
I mean, while you're definitely allowing yourself to get invested.
Yo.
You know, you don't move so far outside your comfort zone and travel clear across the country and things. If you're thinking before you embark on an adventure like that, that it's going to come to nothing.
Yeah.
So.
I've got a few things that I think are really important, and gun control is a pretty big one. And I had the dumbest epiphany while at the march. Because I think of people, sort of more extreme people, who think the Second Amendment means that everybody should get to buy any kind of gun they want, any kind of firearm. And I'm like, that's already not true. Because we already have rules about, like, if you've been convicted of certain felonies and things like that, you're not allowed to. And I don't think there's a big advocating group out there saying these felons deserve their guns too. So I'm like, we've already admitted that it's not a blank check. Well, so now it's just about where we draw the line.
More than that, it's what you said is exactly right. It's
that's exactly the same of that.
No, more than that, then we don't want criminals to have guns. I don't think even the NRA is ever going to push for to deregulate fully automatic weapons or anything
that. Yeah.
Nobody's arguing that people should be able to have rocket propelled grenades or rocket launchers or whatever, even though from the standpoint of the people who argue that the reason we're allowed to have firearms is because we need to be able not just to defend ourselves from like someone robbing our house, but to if the government goes bad or goes rogue, we need to be able to mount an insurgency. And I think everybody would agree that most successful insurgencies in the world do have fully automatic weapons or rocket launchers or whatever, but nobody's arguing that we should have those. So as you say, everyone's pretty much already on the same page about there having to be some rules, and it's exactly what you said. It's where the line is drawn.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that some people, including the NRA, are drawing it at semi-automatic weapons is because... In their minds, I think they do feel like they've reasonably given up things like fully automatic weapons and this type of weapon and that type of weapon. And while I don't think they are particularly attached to semi-automatic weapons, honestly, they just feel like you've got to draw the line a little bit beyond where you're comfortable.
Yeah.
So this is where we're going to draw it. Because, I mean, we'd probably be okay giving up these weapons, but... Then they're just going to ask for the next weapons and then the next weapons. So we'll draw the line here because we feel like we've already reasonably said, yeah, we have to control it for criminals and people with mental illness. And they're even suggesting, a lot of conservatives are suggesting things where family members could, if they notice their family member is a little bit, having some trouble, some difficulties, get a court order to have their guns confiscated for a temporary period of time until...
And some states have already enacted
even. Which I think is a good idea.
I'd be happy... I mean, a great start for me would just be universal background checks. If you just got rid of the various loopholes by which you don't have to have a background check.
See, that's an interesting
point. Gun show ones, online sales, things like that.
That's an interesting point, too, because a lot of, including the NRA, think that background checks are good. So, logically... If you think that, you can't think that and think that the loopholes are okay, or that someone should be able to get by without.
Well, and these things, you say the NRA agrees. Members of the NRA agree. The NRA, as a lobbying entity, fights against this shit, too.
Well, they fight against a lot of things. What I'm saying is...
But if you talk to individual members, they do believe in that.
Well, as far as I know, nobody is lobbying against the background checks, at least as they exist now. Now, true that they get cagey about the loopholes for a reason that is baffling, because it's only logical, right? Mm. If you're saying, yeah, we believe in background checks, because they think there's a gray area there where, you know, my father has a shotgun, a 22, whatever, and if he is tired of having them around, or he's not using them, and he thinks, you know, I could probably sell one of these, he could do that. It's not against the law for him to do that.
Yeah.
And I think the NRA feels like it's his right to be able to do that. But at the same time, what about the whole background checks thing? I mean, if it applies at all, it should apply to every guy.
We got to wrap it up if we hope to draw anything. We've got less than 5 minutes.
Oh, sorry.
So.
But I mean, you and I have talked about this stuff before, so.
All right, draw a thing.
You didn't have anything else to say about it, or your trip home or anything?
Oh. Like I said, less than 5 minutes.
Sorry.
And the trip home was a trip home. I mean, it's not much to say. I hate long trips also.
Do you have a favorite sport, or at least one you enjoy watching?
Who said that? Yeah, I think this is a pretty easy one. We both like roller derby and basically nothing else.
What do you like? Well, baseball.
Oh, yeah. God damn it. You and your America's pastime.
Well, when I was growing up, we played sports at home. I played basketball through high school mostly. So I have participated in sport, and I have enjoyed it, participating in it. I find professional sports, if I like a sport, almost everything I like about it is kind of ruined by professional sports.
You and I had a long talk about this when we first were talking about roller derby, and we're like, all the things we like about it, and we realized that every single thing we liked about it would go away as soon as it became pro.
So I don't follow professional sports. However, I do like... Baseball is probably my favorite sport, my legacy sport, if you will. I think I like roller derby better. But
that's because stuff actually happens in roller derby.
But, oh, no, come on, baseball. It's great for that kind of stuff. I like baseball as a sport, and I like to watch it generally. And I do like to sometimes go to a professional game, but I don't follow it during the season or anything. I do know when it's opening day, which was, I think, today, actually. Or it's this week. I don't remember now. It's very close. So I often know when opening day is, and sometimes I'll catch a game on television if I feel like it. But I'd say growing up, my favorite sport was baseball, and I still catch a pro game every once in a while. But I generally think that as soon as the sport gets professional, there's a lot of things about it that I start to not like.
And I hate sports. I've always hated sports.
Why is that?
I grew up with very little sports. Nobody watched sports in our house. Hmm. I played 2 years in elementary school on soccer. Didn't particularly enjoy it. I did 1 year of track and field, which I just did shot put, basically. Didn't particularly care for it. I don't like competition, and I just never got into it. I don't know what it was. The reason I hate sports is because sports is so all-consuming in our society, but the reason I'm not consumed is because I just have no interest. The hate comes from the world expecting me to have an interest.
Well, and judging you a particular way when you don't.
Or cutting school programs so that you can put more money to sports and shit like that. And honestly, I very much think it's tied to my love of fantasy and sci-fi and my love of role-playing games. But like, these things filled the similar niche that I think sports fill for other people. I mean, people make the joke that, you know, fantasy baseball is almost literally like playing D&D. But just in general, I mean, it's that same thing. It doesn't matter. It's a social thing. You know, how much you spectate versus perform varies, but that also varies, you know, do I read books or do I watch movies or do I play games? And I think it fills that same thing, and so I just never had a need. It's a similar way to me not being at all religious, because I wasn't grown up with any religion.
Yeah, we watched everything. We watched golf. We watched bowling. We watched pool tournaments. We watched football, baseball, basketball.
As a child growing up in the 80s, it was freaky when I didn't have the TV on. So there were times when I would watch things. Most commonly, like, because there's nothing else on, because we had like five channels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The most common one in that was professional wrestling. And that was just because it had the theater.
It's the one thing we didn't watch.
It was ridiculous.
And I participated in just about, in all those sports. I've golfed, tennis, badminton. You name it. If it's a sport, I've probably done it. Except like winter sports, like hockey and curling and stuff like that. I never.
Yeah. But yeah, and I don't know exactly what it is about roller derby that is different.
There's a fun political aspect to it.
There is definitely that's a big part of it. But no, it's just.
Well, you also get to see women participating in a full contact sport, and you don't get to see that very often.
That's true. That's true.
And I don't mind full contact sports. I mean, football. Yeah, I kind of have a like, I don't say love, but because I've never loved it, but a like-hate relationship with it.
Yeah.
Because I can watch it and really like it, but then I'm like, but these guys are getting, you know, they're.
That's the thing. I used to dabble in football occasionally. But never, like, I would go watch the Super Bowl with people and stuff like that. Or if, like, I had no choice but to be sitting in front of a game, I could sort of get into it. But nowadays, it just seems so horrific to me.
Yeah, brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That I can't watch it now. But we are over time. I'm sick of your face. So you'd think after 3 weeks I'd have built up a tolerance or something. But I'm just not used to it. It's just really there, you know. If you'd like to tell, if you had some March for Our Lives stories, if you were at a local one, or if you were at DC, also, everybody say thank you to Jasmine. She's the reason a podcast went up Thursday. We got to Baltimore, it's like 11 o'clock, I'm getting into bed, I have an email, and it's from Jazz saying, everything okay? And I was like, shit! The podcast, and I had it ready. I just had forgotten to post it. So
well, I mean, I noticed it wasn't there, but I thought well,
I was. You're usually my warning bell.
He'll put it up. I just
totally forgot.
I totally trusted you'd get it done.
That was poor plan on your part. It is Jasmine saved our butts.
I should have known better.
But I don't know. Jasmine was asking me about the March some. So I'm guessing you weren't there, Jazz. Anyway. Talk amongst yourselves on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. And then listen next week. I don't really do Twitter anymore, so you don't have to really worry about that or anything. But, listen next week again.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.